Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shabbos Daf Tes Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins the second line from the top of Daf Tes Vov Omid Aleph, Gufo. This is a quote from that which we saw before on Daf Yud Dalid Omid Beis. We have a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can align this with a star that you will find back there on the right-hand side of the text, back on Daf Yud Dalid Omid Beis, and you'll see where this quote is coming from. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Yudches Gozru, Ubi Yudches Nechliku. There were 18 rulings, and in 18 they had a controversy. That is a reference to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, of course, the 18 gzeros that we have been dealing with already since Daf Yud Gimel. The Gemara asks, V'hotanya hushvu, but is there not a Tanaic source that says they were in agreement? The Gemara answers, Bo bayom nechleku, in fact, both sources are correct. They argued on a given day, ulemochar, on the next day, hushvu. That means that Beis Hillel turned to agree to concede to Beis Shammai, but that was on the next day. Gufa, Omar Rav Huna, B'shloisha Mekoymus Nechleku Shammai V'Hillel. This too is a quote back from Daf Yud Dalad Amid Beis, and in order to be able to find where this quote comes from, we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. You can align this with the star on the left-hand side of the Gemara text back on Daf Yud Dalad Amid Beis, and you'll see where this quote is coming from. So Rav Huna said that in three places, Shammai and Hillel, as opposed to Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, these are the original masters, Shammai and Hillel had argued. Before we go on into Gemara, we have on the side a Nosei Mivneh heading, Nosei the topic, and Mivneh the structural note, whereby we feature the house shape, and you can see in the Gemara text, house shapes will be appearing, and they will appear also as numbers to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. So these represent B'shloisha B'koymus Nechleku, Shammai, V'Hillel. These are the three areas in which Shammai and Hillel had argued, and they include, what we've done in our little summary, we've noted the topics. First is Shiur Isa L'chayev B'chala, the amount of dough that one must prepare in order for it to become Chayev, bound in, or in which we, the amount that would necessitate the tithe of Chala. The Chala tithe is a bit of dough that is given to the Kohen when preparing a baked good, provided the dough has the proper quantity, the necessary quantity. The next topic will be Shiur Mayim Shuvim Hapoislim B'mikvah, the amount of drawn water that would render a mikvah unacceptable. And the third topic is Tumo Lemafreya Benida, retroactive Tumo with regard to a menstruant woman. So we begin here, the first topic, Shammai Omer Mikav Chala. Shammai says that if you have a kav, which is a quantity, a kav of dough, then you would have to take off the chala tithe. V'hilo Omer Mikabayim, if you have two kav of dough. V'chachomim Omrim Lo Kedivrei Zeh V'lo Kedivrei Zeh. The Chachomim say not like either one of these opinions, Elo Kav U'mechza Chayav B'chala. Rather, 1.5 kav is the amount necessary for, at which point there would be a challah tithe requirement. Mishehigdilu hamidos, when they increased the midos. In other words, in the desert, there was a certain midah, it's called midborios. The desert standard was increased when they came into Eretz Yisrael. So the what was originally termed a 1.5 kav, Omru, when they were magdil the midos, they said chameshes rivoyim kema chayove bechala. That's 5/4 of a kav. That's 1.25 would be 1.25 kav instead of 1.5 kav. What was originally 1.5 kav with the new measuring standard, that became 1.25 kav. It's the same quantity, but in terms of the name we ascribe to the quantity, there is a difference. The original 1.5 kav is the now new 1.25 kav. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chamisha Pturin, that's 5/4, in fact, would be exempt. Chamisha V'oid Chayavim, but 5/4 and a little bit more is the minimum amount from which there would be a necessary challah tithe taken. V'idoch, the other area, Hillel Omer, Mole Hin Mayim Shuvim Poislin Es HaMikvah. The term Hin is also 12 lug. We're dealing with liquid measures. So a hin of drawn water would render a mikvah unfit. Now, we have to point out that this is a case where you have an incomplete mikvah. A mikvah is defined as a minimum of 40 se'ah, which is 3 cubic amos of water. And in actuality, it's gathered, it's rainwater that gathers in a pool. In other words, the rainwater accumulates in a pool without being drawn in vessels, without being poured, accumulated in vessels and poured into the pool, but it's rather through through pipes, we'll say, that are carved out of a structure that's already attached to the ground, so that we don't encounter any problem of water being in vessels, but rather everything is what's known as mechubar lekarka. Water accumulates after it rains. The rainwater accumulates in a pool, and once you have 40 sa'ah of rainwater, then if you were to pour in drawn water, it would have no negative effect on the mikvah. When we speak about mayim shuvim poslim as a mikvah, we're dealing with what is as yet an incomplete amount of rain water. If you were to then pour into this incomplete mikvah drawn water, that would render the mikvah incapable of becoming a kosher mikvah. So the amount spoken about by Hillel is 12 lug, or a hin, of drawn water renders the mikvah posel. And the reason he used the word hin, which is a rather unusual word, is shechayev odom loymar b'loshon rabo. This is what Hillel had heard from his teacher. He heard the word hin, and therefore he used it. And in fact, so Rashi points out that the word hin is a Torah word and not a loshon, not an expression you would find in rabbinic literature, but Shmaya ve'avtalion, which were the teachers of Hillel, they had used the expression hin, and therefore he adopted that expression in his teaching. Continuing in the source, Shammai Omer, Tisha Kabin. 9 kav of drawn water would render the mikveh puzzle, unacceptable. The Chachomim Omrim, lo kidivreze v'lo kidivreze, neither one of these opinions is the way to go. Ad shebo shnei gardai mishar ha'ashba shibushalayim, until 2 weavers came who will tell us what the true amount is. 2 weavers came from the dung gate in Yerushalayim, ve'idu mishum shmai v'avtayim, and they testified, having heard from shmai v'avtayim, sheshloisha lugin mayim shuvim poislam es ha'mikvah, that a mere 3 lug of drawn water will render a mikvah unfit. V'kaimu chachomim es divrayim. The chachomim accepted their word. In other words, you have here two people testifying as to what Shmaya v'Atayin really said, and they were their testimony was accepted over the other recorded amounts. The idach, the third example of the or the third case in which Shammai and Hillel argued, Shammai Omer Kol Hanoshim Dayon Shaitan, that a woman upon seeing blood, the female blood flow, where there is no retroactive tumah, but it's enough that we are metamer from the point Dayon Shaitan from the point that she sees the blood. Hillel Omer Mipkido Lepkido Vafilu Liyomim Rabim. Hillel says that if the woman checked herself today and she finds blood, in other words, the blood flow starts, we will metama her limafreya, we'll metama her retroactively back to the last time that she checked and found herself to be tahora. So that even though she's seeing the blood today, we suspect that the blood flow may have started a long time before, even many days before, and we will declare anything she had touched, any taharos that she had touched since the last checking, to be tomei. That's mipkido lepkido, from the last checking to the previous checking that she found herself to be blood free. V'chachomim omrim lo kedivrei zeh v'lo kedivrei zeh. The Chachamim say, we're not going to say none, what's no retroactive tumah, nor are we going to go all the way back to the last checking. Elo, me'eis le'eis me'ma'eit ayyadei mi'pkido l'pkida. Me'eis le'eis is an expression meaning the last 24 hours. In other words, if she sees blood now, we will metama her retroactively 24 hours, meaning anything she touched within the last 24 hours will be rendered tomei. Even though her last checking may have been, the last checking where she discovered herself to be Tahora may have been many days before. That's the idea of the 24 hour reduces the amount of time that the otherwise Mipkido Lepkido would have necessitated. Mipkido Lepkido Mipma'et Al Yad Me'es Leis. You can have a situation where the woman checks herself now and sees a blood flow, but she checked herself 8 hours earlier and found that she was did not have a blood flow. So that we will then metama her a mere 8 hours retroactive tumah. That means anything she had handled within the last 8 hours is tamei, and not go all the way back 24 hours to declare her tamei. So that sometimes the 24 hour reduces the 24 hour retroactive time period reduces the retroactive time period that would have been generated by the checkings, and sometimes the checkings can reduce the retroactive time period that otherwise would be necessitated by a 24-hour retroactive period, as we explained. The Gemara asks, Vesu Leka, are there no other examples of a controversy between Hillel and Shammai? V'ika Hillel Omer Lismoch V'Shammai Omer Lo Lismoch. The word lismoch is a reference to the placing of the hands by the owner on his sacrifice that he brings to the Beis HaMikdash. So there is a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel regarding someone who brings voluntary offerings that are known as nedarim and nedavos to the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Tov. And the necessity of placing one's hands on the sacrifice. So Hillel and Shammai argue about that, where Hillel says you do the smicha ritual, and Shammai says you do not do it on Yom Tov. So why is this not? Why does Rav Huna not record this as one of the areas in which Shammai and Hillel argue? The Gemara answers, Ki koma Rav Huna. Rav Huna, in recording three areas, Hecha deleka plukta de Rav Visobadayu. That is, these are the three that he listed were cases that in previous generations there had been no controversy concerning those matters. However, the case of the smicha is actually a controversy that they simply continued, but had been argued by the sages for quite a few generations before Hillel and Shammai as well. So that's not what Rav Huna was interested in counting. The Gemara asks, "V'ho'ikol?" You'll notice this double underline marking is simply to highlight these questions, and we've noted them on the side. V'ikra kushyos v'ha yesh od machlokos Hillel v'shamai v'lo rak shlosha. So are there not more? And here's another example. V'ikra boitzer lagas shamai omer huchshir v'yesh Hillel omer lo huchshir. Habotzer lagas is the harvesting of grapes for grape pressing to turn into wine. So botzer is harvesting, lagas for the press. The liquid that oozes forth from the grapes that are collected in baskets. There is a machlokus whether the grape juice that oozes forth from them is capable of being machshir the grapes to mekabel tuma. In order for fruits to be capable of receiving tuma, in order for food items to be able to mekabel tuma, they have to encounter wetness through contact with liquids that the owner of which was desirous of. In other words, he was desirous of the liquids. Not necessarily that the fruits should become wet, but that the fruits came into contact with liquid that he was desirous of. We have touched on this topic in the past. If you recall the sugya dealing with one who inverts a bowl over the wall to protect it from becoming wet, the water that runs off the bowl and hits fruits, would that machshir it lekabel tuma? A topic we've discussed in the past. So here, someone is harvesting the grapes, and he's harvesting for wine production. This is as opposed to harvesting them for, let's say, raisin production. The liquid that comes out in the case of for wine production, so even though the liquid here is going to go to waste because they harvested them and placed the grapes in baskets that had holes in them, so the liquid is going to go to waste. Shammai nevertheless says that the grapes are mukhshir lekabel tuma. Hillel, on the other hand, says they're not mukhshir lekabel tuma. So why was this not featured as a machlokes Shammai and Hillel by Rav Huna? The Gemara's answers, bar mine dahi, with this exception, the hosam koshosik le Hillel l'Shammai, because in this case it didn't. They didn't really argue in the full sense of the word, because Hillel remained silent and didn't maintain the machlokes. Hillel remained silent and accepted, we'll say that he accepted or seemed to accept the Shammai position. The Lashon that we see later in the Rashi uses over here is v'lo omad b'mach lukoso. He didn't maintain his opposing opinion. Rashi, three lines into the wide lines under the Gemara text, Shammai omer huchsharu b'yayin, through the grape juice hanidlaf me'am al gabem that drips onto the other grapes. Even though the liquid, this grape juice, is going to go to waste, it's going to drip forth from the baskets into which the grapes are placed. This is Rashi's referring to the Gemara that's found later on Daf Yud Zayin this gzera is in anticipation of one harvesting the grapes into baskets that are lined, and the water, the grape juice, would not go to waste. And in that case, he's quite interested in that mashke because he's harvesting these grapes for wine production. And there, the liquid would actually be accumulated and not go to waste. There's a Rashi, another Rashi that we would like to look at before we go on in the Gemara. It's the second wide line, Habotzer Anovim Ledorchon Begas, a person who was harvesting grapes for pressing them and into making wine. The Ilu Habotzer Litzimukin, if you were dealing with someone who was harvesting for making raisins, Mashke Hayotze Mehen Ein Machshirim Lo Nicholei, the liquid that comes forth from there would not be machshir, because he is not interested in that liquid whatsoever. After all, he's interested in drying out the grapes for raisin production. He's not interested in having that liquid present in the first place. So therefore, it's not a liquid that would be machshir lekabel tumah. We continue in the Gemara. Yosi ben Yoezer ish Tzreidav, Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yushalayim, gozru tumo al eretz ha'amim v'al kli zechuchis. This was mentioned back on Yud Dalet Amud Beis, and when we learned it in our Daf Yomi Shir, we did not spend much time on their gezer, because we were really focusing at that point in the Gemara on the machlokis of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, which was more accurately Shammai and Hillel regarding Tumas Yodayim. But at this point, the Gemara is going back to discuss the topic of Tumas Eretz Amim and Kli Zechuchis, as was featured in the source there. So it was stated that Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan, they were responsible for Tumas Eretz Amim. The Gemara is going to challenge this, for we find someone else who was who made the gezera of Tumas Eretz Amim. And on the side of our Gemara, we have listed this under our Nosei heading, Mi Gozar Tumas Eretz Ho'amim. This discussion lasts till Amud Beis. So the Gemara opens with a long question, and you can see we've indicated this with a kuf that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text and a descending vertical dashed line, which takes you to the bottom of the Gemara. V'ho Rabbonon D'shmoinim Shona Gozar. The Rabbonon of 80 years will become clear as we go on in the Gemara, but for our purposes right now, it's a different source, a different authorship of the Gezera. Maybe before we go on, just let's remind ourselves, the Gezera of Tumas Eretz Amim means that if one is found outside of the land of Israel, one leaves Eretz Israel. So the mere fact that he left Eretz Israel and he's standing in Eretz Ho'amim, the areas outside of Israel, that makes him Tomei Midrabonon. And we alluded to this rather quickly in our previous shiur. This has to do with the fact that that he might be in contact with a grave in which a Gentile buried their dead. And there's a chashash, we don't know where the Gentiles bury their dead. They might bury them just anywhere, or there might be and that will generate tumah. So as a result of that fear, because you're in the land of the Nohrim, of the Gentiles, so this tumah was imposed because of the suspicion, or the thought that maybe he came into contact with a Gentile grave. So the Gemara asks, how can you say that the Yosis were responsible for Tumas Eretz Amim v'or Rabbanan d'shmoinim shana gozer? The Omer of Kahana, Rav Kahana told us, Kishechola Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi, Sholchulo, when Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yosi took ill, they sent to him the following request. Rebbe, Emor Lonu, Shnaim Shoshet Varim Shomarto, Shum Avicha, please tell us two or three halachas in the name that you have, that you've heard in the name of your father. Sholach lohem kach omar abo. And he sends to them, well, thusly says said father. Kufpe is 180 shana ad shelochor habayis poshtemachus rosh al Yisrael. That 180 years before the destruction of the temple, so the Roman Empire started to its rule over Israel. Shmoinim Shana, Ashlochorov Abayas, and here we have the expression Shmoinim Shana, the Rabbon of Shmoinim Shana that we mentioned before, and here you'll see it's much clearer. 80 years before Ashlochorov Abayas, Gozru Tumo al Eretz Amim, the Al Kli Zechuchis. 80 years before the destruction of the temple, it's very often, let's say, recorded that the temple destruction was 70 of the common era. So if you speak about 80 years before its destruction, you're talking about 10 years before the common era. that is when the ruling of Tumas Eretz Yoharim was established, and also that glass would be something that is capable of becoming Tomei. Men shana shalachor of Abayas golsa lo Sanhedrin v'yoshva lo b'chanuyos. 40 years before the destruction of the temple, the Sanhedrin, which ordinarily sat in a chamber located adjacent to the Azora of the Beis HaMikdash, known as the Lishkas HaZgozis. So 40 years before the destruction of the temple, they were exiled from their formal location, and they sat in session in Chanuyos. Chanuyos is an area outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Lamai Hilchasa, of what value is this particular point of information, that they no longer sat in the Lishkas HaGozis? So there's a bracketed section that we'll skip momentarily. It says, Shalodonu Dinei Nefoshos. Because they were exiled from their formal position, they no longer judged capital cases. Now let's go over the section that we just skipped. Again, the Gemara asks, Lamai Hilchasa, Omer of Yisro Bar Avdimi, Lomar, Shalodonu Dinei Knossos. Because they were exiled from their formal location, they no longer judged cases of Knas. Knas in English is sometimes translated as penalties that we would call fines. These are monetary penalties that don't necessarily correspond to the value of the damage that was caused, but rather a fixed amount that's legislated by the Torah or by the Rabbanon. That's called Knas. So the Gemara asks, Dinei Knossos HaKadai Tachwat, because they were exiled from the Lishkas HaGozes, from their formal location in the Beis HaMikdash, that means they no longer judged Dinei Knossos. That's simply not true. We know as a fact that they continued to don Dinei Knossos even after the destruction of the temple. Elo Emo, rather say, Shalodonu Dinei Nefoshos, as a result of their being exiled from the temple, from the Beis HaMikdash location, so they stopped judging capital cases. So that, by the way, this is rather off the topic, but there are psukim that the Gemara darshans to explain why, if the Sanhedrin is not located in their temple location, you can no longer judge capital cases. But that's, as we said, that's not part of our, it's not part of the thrust of our Gemara right now. So getting back to the issue at hand is, who is the author of the Tumas Eretz Yoharim Gzeira? At this point, we suggested we're asking, but is it not the Rabbanon of Shmoinim Shana? That means the Rabbanon that lived 80 years before the temple's destruction. By the way, this is a much later time period, but here the Gemara asks, V'chitema b'pei Shana nami inhu havu. You might want to say that Yosi ben Yosef and Yosi ben Yochanan were present during that time period, this time period of 80 years before temple destruction. That's not true. V'hotanya, Hillel, v'Shimon, Gamliel, v'Shimon. Here is a list of four Nesiim, Nagu Nesiuson, b'fnei habayis mem shana. That means 100 years before the temple's destruction, Hillel was the Nasi. Starting from Hillel, you're starting a period 100 years before the temple destruction. He was the Nasi, the leader of the Jewish people. Vilu Yosi ben Yoezer, ish tredov, Yosi ben Yochanan havu kadmi tuvar. They were many generations before Hillel. So that if Hillel was 100 years before the temple destruction, and they were a number of generations before that, so they certainly were not around at the point of time that we call 80 years before the temple destruction. They lived quite a bit earlier than that. So at this point, we are left with a question of the authorship of Tumas Eretz Yoharim, who was responsible for that. On the one hand, we said that the Yosis were responsible for that. On the other hand, we have this long question, you see, that the Rabbanon, the Pei Shana, were responsible. we go to the top of Amud Beis. You'll notice there's a new geometric form. We have a house form. And on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading, we've written, these are Nisyonos Liyashev HaMakoros Binyanmi Gozer Tumo Al Eretz Ha'amim. These are attempts to resolve who is the author of that Gezerah. So the Gemara says, Elo Osu Inhu Gozer Agusha Lisrof V'Avira V'lo Klum. Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan, they came and made the following two-part ruling. Gusha is a reference to clumps of dirt, actual dirt. Truma that would touch the dirt would become Tomei. They made a gzera regarding the Tuma capabilities of the dirt of Eretzam, brought dirt from the from outside of Israel. However, Valvira, this is a case of Rashi uses the example of Truma that enters the airspace without anything blocking it from the ground. In other words, it was brought, let's say, in a cart that had an open bottom to it. So that's the Avir, airspace, Veloklum. They didn't impose any Tuma on the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim. V'yosu Rabbonin de Peishana, Gozur Avira Litlos, and the Rabbonin of Peishana came and made a Gzera regarding the airspace that the Truma would be set aside to rot. So, just to review again, the first, according to this approach, the Rabbi Yossi's made a gzera on the gush, that Truma that touches the gush, you would burn the Truma. Regarding airspace, they didn't deal with it. The Rabbonu de Peishana came along and made, they imposed a gzera on the airspace regarding Truma that's brought into the airspace of Eretz Ha'amim, Litlos, it would be set aside to rot. The Gemara asks, you'll notice, as we said before, that there's our, as you look over this entire Omid, let's say three quarters of the Omid is dedicated to the to this topic of the, we'll call stages in trying to understand who made what Gezerah concerning Tumas Eretz Ha'amim, the Tuma of the diaspora. So the Gemara now asks, "Lameimra detchilas detchila dechado gezerta hava l'sreifa." According to the way we just set things up, we're saying that the beginning, the first stage of the gzera, at the beginning of the gzera stages, there was a ruling to burn the Truma. The Omar Ilfa, but Ilfa taught Yodayim Trilas Gzeros and Lisrefa, that when it came to the Tuma imposed on hands that we've learned about in the past, that unwashed hands are Metame Truma, so we say that unwashed hands are Posel Truma, that means you would burn the Truma. But only in the case of hands was the initial gzera made, resulting in the burning of truma. Yodayim hu de tchilas gzeros in lesreifa. Only with regard to hands was the initial ruling made, resulting in the burning of truma. Ha midi achrino lo. But in none of the other areas where we speak about truma being ruined, do we say that the truma is actually to be burnt. It should be pointed out, just by way of general thinking, that there is a Torah prohibition of a wanton burning of Truma. It's forbidden to burn Truma. And if the Rabbanan are imposing a rule, it would be not so simple, we'll say. It's not wasn't very easy for the Rabbanan to impose a rule that would result in the burning of Truma if you tell me that Midoraisa doesn't need to be burnt. So it is true they made such a ruling, but only with regard to hands, but not with regard to other things, as far as the initial gzera is concerned. Ella, Osu, Inhu. So we try again to try to resolve what were the Yossis responsible for and what were the Rabbonin de Peishana responsible for. And this double underlining helps to emphasize each author. Elaosu inhu gozer agusha litlos vaviro veloklum. The Yossis made their initial gzera regarding the dirt, the gusha, the clumps of dirt, or the ground of the Eretz Ha'amim. Truma that comes into contact with it, litlos, is set aside to rot. not to actually burn, v'avir v'lo klum, but they did not deal at all with the avir of Eretz Ha'am, of the airspace. The Osir Rabbanon de Peishana, gozer agusho lisrof, only later, when the Rabbanon of Peishana came around, did they impose a gzera concerning the ground that would result in the burning of Truma that came into contact with the dirt of Eretz Ha'amim, v'avira litlos, and they imposed a gzera regarding the airspace, that Truma that enters the airspace of Tumas of Eretz Ha'amim would be set aside to rot. The Gemara asks, v'akati b'usha gozer, but still, in Usha, the ruling was made, lisrof, to burn, and not the Rabbanon of Peishana. Disnan, and we have a long question that takes in a source. And notice the kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with the descending vertical dashed line shows you the length of this question, where it says as follows, Al vov sfeikas sorfen es truma. With regard to six areas where doubt arises concerning tuma, the possibility of tuma, in six areas, and only six areas will we burn truma. In all other areas where there's doubt concerning the tuma of truma, we will say, set it aside to rot. Now, this source has a lot of information in it, but in Gemara markings, we tend to emphasize the structure and the main aspects of the sugya. Tangential information is very important, but it will be discussed in other Gemara, so that we won't dwell on some of the other points mentioned in this source. We want to focus on that which you see dashed, underlined in this source. And it says, Sofek ofer habo me'eretz ha'amim, and then if you skip to the end of this source, it says v'omar ula elu shishos sfeikus b'usha hiskinu. These rules were established in Usha, and of these rules, you see rule number two, which is relevant to our discussion. That having been said, the question continues. Disnan al shishos sfeikus sorfenus atruma. Over six areas of doubt, we will actually burn truma, as opposed to just leaving the side to rot. Number one, al sofek beis hapras. This would be truma that entered a field there's a grave somewhere in the field, but we don't know where the grave is. The al sofek ofer habo me'eretz ha'amim. If truma comes into contact with dirt that comes from outside the land of Israel. And we mentioned before, and Rashi mentions it here, that the dirt coming from outside the land of Israel, there's a suffix, kever shomes, a suffix that a Gentile might have been buried in that dirt. Number three, gal suffix bigdei amoretz, the clothing of an ignoramus, so his wife may have sat on them when she was a nida. And that would make the clothing a medrash. So we don't know. So if truma comes into contact with the clothing of an ignoramus, so the truma will be burnt. The al-safik kelim hanimtsaim, vessels that are found, and we don't know whether the vessels are tummy or not, so we will say the truma will have to be burnt. The al-safik haroikin, if truma comes into contact with saliva, the origin of which we don't know, so we suspect maybe it came from a zav. A zav is a male that has a certain type of emission, and that emission renders the man into a zav, and his saliva is metamez, an av hatuma. So if we find saliva around, we don't know where it comes from, we will, and truma comes into contact with it, we will burn the truma. V'al sofek mei ragle adam shekeneged mei ragle behema. If there is urine that might be human urine that's next to mei raglayim of an animal, we say as follows: al vadai magoin. If truma comes into contact, it was a definite contact with any of these things. Shu sofek tumasan. There is still a doubt whether any of the above items are actually tame, sorfenes truma, by the mere fact that the truma came into contact with all of these, with any one of these items, that will be grounds for burning the truma. Rabbi Yossi Omer, af al sofek magon, birshus hayochid. Sarfin. Rabbi Yossi goes even further, even if there's a doubt whether the Truma came into contact with any of these things, but the doubt arose in a private domain, in a Rishus HaYochid, that too is grounds for burning the Truma. The Chum say that even though it may be a private domain, which is an area, generally speaking, where Safek Tuma Brishus HaYochid were Machmir, but here the whole topic is a Safek. So the Chum say that if the Safek aroused, maybe it touched any one of these items or not, and it aroused that suffix, that doubt arose in a private domain. So the Chum say we'll set the truma aside to rot, that's toilin, and if the doubt arose in a public domain, did it have contact with these things or not? So it will be tahor. But once again, that's because there's a doubt whether there was contact. If there was actual contact with any of these doubtful items, we will burn it. The Omar Ula, Elu Shisha Sfekas, the Usha Hiskinu. So Ula says that these six Sfekas were established in Usha. And not to lose the sight of the forest for the trees, the second point was Sufik Ofer Habo Me'eretz Amim. So we see that Tumas Eretz Amim was something that Usha, in the city of Usha, it was ruled upon. So now we have three authors. How do we resolve all of them? Ella. So the Gemara explains. Also, Inhu Gozer Agusha Litlos Ve'Avira V'lo Klum. The Yossis made, they were the first stage, and they made a gzera concerning the dirt of Eretz Amim. The Truma coming into contact with that would be set aside to rot. Airspace, they didn't make any gzeras. The Osi Rabbonin de Shmoinim Shana Gozer Edi V'Edi Litlos, the Rabbonin of Pei Shana of the 80 years before the destruction of the temple, the ruling was that not only dirt contact, but also airspace contact will result in Litlos, setting aside the Truma to rot. The Osi Usha, and in the city of Usha, the ruling that was made was Gozer Agusha Lisrof V'Avira Kidekoi Koi. If it comes into contact with the dirt of Eretz Amim, now we will actually burn the Truma. With regard to the airspace, so the original Gzera will remain. You know, as the previous Gzera, it will litlos, means set it aside, set the Truma aside to rot. As we go on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading on the side, the Nosei, and we indicate that this goes till Tes Zion Omid Beis, Gzeras Tumo al Kli Zuchuchis, the Gzera that was set upon glass as something that will be makabel tuma. And we also note that this is a very long sugya. This lasts till Tes Zayin Omid Beis. So the Gemara. Kli zuchuchis, my time of gozer b'ru rabbonon tuma. Why did the rabbonon impose tuma on glass? Omer Eish Lokish hoyul utchilas briyoson min achoyul. Since glass is manufactured from sand, chavinu rabbonon kikli cheres. So hole is sand, also it can be referred to as the term dirt also applies, and or let's say hole is more accurately, we'll say sand. It is made, it's treated like clay ware. So since the glass and clay have a similar original raw material, so it's treated, the glass is treated like kli cheres, and kli cheres is clay ware that we know is makabel tuma from the Torah. So they patterned glassware to be like clayware. El Omeyato. Now, we will see a number of triangles, and they'll appear in two different directions. So we note under our Mivneh heading, these triangles, the point facing up, are kushios ala hezber, the tan, the kli suchis, makabel tuma, mipnei shishavinu, rabona, kikli cheres. Challenging this point that if it's so that glass is patterned after Kli Cheres, so then why doesn't glass have all the properties of Kli Cheres, or all the halachic properties of Kli Cheres? So the Gemara asks, Elo Me'ato, if this be so, that glass is like Cheres, halachically of course, Lo Tehe Lohen Taro B'Mikveh. They should not be able to achieve Taro in a mikveh, through immersion in a mikveh. Which in fact is the case by the Kli Cheres, that they, once they become Tomei, you cannot, immersing them doesn't help. Aloma Tanan, so why does it say, the Elu Choytzitzin Bekelim, the following materials serve as an interposition with regard to vessels, and the concept of a chatzitza has relevance only when you're dealing with immersing it in a ritual pool, a mikveh, where we're interested that the water comes into contact directly with the vessel without encountering a chatzitza, an interposition. So what materials serve as a chatzitza? Hazefes v'hamor bit kli zechuchis. Zephis and more are two types of very sticky substances. They would serve as a chatzitza with regard to kli zechuchus, indicating that kli zechuchus, that glass, is subject to tahara b'mikveh, which is not the case with kli cheres. So how can you say that the kli zechuchus is patterned after the kli cheres? The Gemara answers that basically zechuchus is like cheres. Hocha b'mayaskinon, the case referred to in this source where the glass has a potential tara. The mikveh is kigon shenikvo. It's a glass vessel that developed a hole in it. The hitif l'soichan avor for bimeir he, and hitif is literally to drip into it, but they attached to it some avor is lead. It's metallic. And the metal served to seal the hole in this, the metal attachment. It's like a type of soldering, if you will. The lead was attached to the glass and thereby sealed it, made it into a useful vessel. Rabbi Meir, and in accordance with Rabbi Meir, that says, that when you have a broken vessel and there's something that repairs it, it preserves it, that holds it together, the vessel's definition is according to that which created its repair, and in this case, the avor, the lead, the molten lead, is what caused it to become useful again. So that even though maybe the majority of the vessel is still glass, it's defined as metallic. Desanya, glassware that developed a hole in it and lead was dripped into it. Amar Shimon Leo, Rabbi Meir Metame, V'Chachamim Metarin. You see, in this source, we've dashed underline Avor, and we dashed underline Rabbi Meir Metame, indicating that, as we said before, up till this point, basically glassware, if it doesn't have holes in it, is treated like cheres. And the fact that you see an example of glassware having tower in a mikveh, that's because it's a special case. It's glassware that developed a hole in it and was sealed with a metallic substance. And following Shitas Rabbi Meir, that source says that it has a din of a kli matchis and has tara in a mikveh. But that's only because it had a hole, and we say holech achar ha-maimid. The Gemara asks, but still, elameato, that zechuchis is like cheres. This question is a long question, and you can see it goes down a number of lines from the top of Daf Tez Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Gemara asks, elameato, that zechuchis is treated like cheres, lo litamu migabon, then the glassware should not be susceptible to tumah from its outside. Aloma tanan, so why is it taught kli cheres ukli neser? We have in the following source, it says that clayware and neser are vessels made from type of white earth. Their tumah is similar, tumas and shaveh. And here are a list of halachas that apply to them. You'll notice we've dashed underlined on the next line, the ein mitamin migabehen. They are not susceptible to tumah from their outside. And then after following this source, the Gemara makes an inference: kli neser u'kli cheres hu de tumasim shaveh, aval midi achrin lo. But other things like glass are not like them. So, all told, we're going to see at the end of this long question that glass is not treated like kli cheres. So this brings into question the original point that why did kli zechuchis receive a label of tumah, that they're capable of absorbing tumah. We said it was patterned after kli cheres, but we see here the kli zechuchis are not patterned after the kli cheres. So now we look into the details of this source. The source at the top of the Gemara, kli cheres and kli neser, we say tumas on shaveh. They have similar laws regarding tumah. Mitamin umitamin me'a virehen. They can absorb tumah and transmit tumah through their airspace. if a, let's say you dangled a dead sheret in the airspace of one of these materials, kli cheres or kli neser, so the vessel would become tomei. And once you have a kli cheres that is tomei, if you dangle food in its airspace without actually coming into contact with the vessel itself, the food will become tomei. U'mitamin me'achorehen. The term me'achorehen, you have to imagine a vessel that has a that has a type of stand. In other words, you have this often with goblets of all kinds, where if you flip it over, where the base, it stands on a base, but the base itself is hollowed out. That's the achorehen, and it's called the chakak in the base moshavam. If, let us say, you dangle a dead sheretz in the airspace of that base, that hollowed out base of the vessel, that's the vessel will become tomei. That's the second point of similarity. And number three, the ein mitamin migabehen. If tumah comes into contact with the outside surface of a kli cheres, the kli cheres or kli neser will not become tomei. Ushviroson mitaroson. And when they become tomei, the way to mitire them is by smashing them. And that is by breaking them, that will remove the tumah, as opposed to immersion in a mikveh. We infer that it's these things that have these points in common, but other things, including glassware, will not be like them. And we have a little note just to complete the idea by the star, and we've written, the glassware will absorb tuma through contact with tuma from its outside on its outside surface. The Gemara answers, and we have a little one over here. This one is followed by a number two on the top of Omid Beis. So, because we're in the context of our Daf Yomi Shir, we'll just read the first answer, leaving the second for our next Daf Yomi Shir. So the answer is Amri Kevon Dechi Nishtabru Yeshlem Takona. Glassware, in the event that it breaks, it can be repaired. You can melt it down, you subject it to intense heat, and reform it into a complete vessel. It has a Takona. So Shabinu Kekli Machis. So the Kli Zuchus is patterned after metal vessels. And metal vessels are Mekabel Tumah. So therefore, when the rabbis introduced Tumah to Kli Zchuchas, they said we're patterning them after Kli Matches. And why is that? Like the Gemara said, because both of them, Kli Zchuchas has this similarity to Kli Matches in that they too can be repaired. Of course, you can see through our markings inverted triangles that will bring this comparison into question, and that will Mirza Shem be the subject of our next shiur. So this concludes today's Gemara section of Gemara Markings Daf Yomi. For those who are interested, our site offers a shiur on today's Daf Yomi Tosfos, presenting the Tosfos text with explanation.